Well, yesterday, as I mentioned, we had really an opportunity to talk about the issue of sexuality and as it relates to women's lives, particularly with Dr. Julie Slattery. But today we're welcoming in Michael Todd Wilson, or as he's affectionately known, MT, a licensed professional counselor. And we're going to talk really about the way that Christian leaders deal with this issue of human sexuality, and especially on the path to sexual integrity. And MT, good afternoon, and we appreciate you joining us today.
Well, thanks for having me.
All right, so your interest in this topic obviously has become more pronounced because you must have dealt with a number of Christian leaders who continue to struggle in this area.
That's true. That's true. Two of the areas that I, or the groups of people that I like to work with most are men and just general men's issues, as well as Christian leaders. And so this is sort of a merging of two areas that I care deeply about in terms of supporting especially men in Christian leadership.
Mm. Early on, you bring up two different questions, and it's the way that these are asked that might deliver us different answers. The one is, do you struggle with sexual integrity? The second question is, how do you struggle with sexual integrity? Why the important difference here?
Well, the first question shuts down the conversation. And it either you're going to have to answer the question yes or no, and so it doesn't really invite further dialogue. And second of all, it presumes that there are some of us who really don't struggle. And I think at some level, men, women alike, we all struggle with sexual integrity. And so obviously some more than others. I mean, not everybody deals with addiction. But everybody struggles with, because we live in a fallen world and we're fallen people. So to me, to ask the question, how do you struggle with sexual integrity, at least makes the presumption that we all deal with it at some level and gives permission to be able to have conversation, which is what I find, especially in the conservative Christian church, we don't give permission for those kinds of conversations. It's not okay to have them, but we really need dialogue, and that's especially true among Christian leaders.
Mm-hmm. I want to come back to that question about permission in a moment, but you've noted that really your writings here are not so much about equipping for people as it is giving this idea of permission. And with that, who has the right to be asking those questions? I don't mean that in an offensive way. I'm just saying you don't just naturally sit down and say, so let me just ask you a question here. How do you struggle with sexual integrity? I mean, that's not exactly the way you're going to start a conversation. So who's got the permission to get into that discussion in the first place?
Well, I think each of us can give permission to other people to be intimately involved in our lives. It's those, you know, you've seen those pictures of the circles of, you know, on the outside, concentric circles on
yep.
the outside, you've got person X, and on the inside, you've got the closer people.
Yeah.
Those people that are close to us have sort of earned the right to be able to ask probing questions, and we will allow them to ask those questions, and we're more likely to be honest. So I think the closer we have a relationship with someone, we probably have some collateral, if you will, to be able to ask those kinds of questions and have some honest dialogue.
You've noted that even some of the suggestions that you're making could be interpreted by some within the Christian leadership community as dangerous. Why would that be?
Well, dangerous in the sense that you know, we expect people in the pews to struggle with certain things, but people in congregations don't really stop to think about the fact that Christian leaders may struggle, and they have human, you know, feet of human clay like anybody else does. So it's a little, I don't know, it just we have a tendency to look at our leadership, to look at our Christian leaders, and think, gosh, they have it all together. And I don't know that we would say they were perfect, but we kind of act that way a little bit. And so it's just a little dangerous when we talk about what does it mean to give a Christian leader grace that they may be struggling with some things and they need safe places to be able to talk it through because they're on a sanctification journey just like we are. Mm. Now, we kind of hope that they're better off than most, right?
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't mean that they're perfect.
Okay, if we went into a Christian bookstore, let's go back 40 years ago, walked in and looked for books related to this topic versus today, would there be a significant change in the amount of resources that discuss this?
No question. No question about it. And it would be the same as with alcohol many years ago. I mean, there was a time and a season where, you know, to talk about alcoholism in the church would have been very taboo. Now, you know, it's very commonplace for people to talk about struggles with alcohol and other kinds of things. But it's the same kind of taboo that I think we're finally breaking down now and talking about sexuality in the church and struggles with, you know, things such as pornography and whatnot. There's a lot more resources that are out there because there's a lot of other people who've done writings around this topic, maybe not so much about Christian to Christian leaders, but just to the church on this subject. So there's a lot more resources now than there used to be, for sure, and that's a good thing.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so what kind of damage does this do overall, left unattended, in terms of the greater Christian community when you have people in Christian leadership positions who fall in one way or another?
Well, you know, obviously when anyone gets involved in any of these kinds of things, there's damage that happens not only in that person's life but also in their family and people that are close to them. When you're talking about a Christian leader, though, there's additional kinds of damage, because you just take a small church, maybe a church of 150 people, you know, maybe a small Christian church. You've got those 150 people that are affected by that person's moral failure. You've got their family. You've got everybody who is one step removed from all of those families in the congregation. You've got all of those people who are in the community who know of that person's status in the community. So there's a rippling effect. Even a small church can literally impact thousands of lives.
How about,
and so that's the reason.
Yeah. Okay, so families, though, in particular, get impacted. Does this get passed on from generation to generation?
Well, there is a sense in which there's generational sin, especially when you're talking about when there's family of origin wounds that sometimes show up in sexual compulsive and sexual addictive behaviors.
Mm-hmm.
But I think we're to the place now where it's so commonplace that our culture is so sex-saturated that it doesn't really even require there to be some kind of generational sin for it to impact us. I mean, the Internet has changed everything in terms of the ability for pornography and for sexual distortions to reach out and to touch an individual's life. So you're seeing, you know, kids, for example, now are growing up with the average age of exposure almost down to 5 or 6 now with regard to pornographic content. It has the ability to reach out and to touch us in ways that it didn't before. So, yes, there is a generational sin component to it, but it's just much more ubiquitous now, and it has the ability to touch us in a way that it didn't before.
I see. All right, we're going to take a time out here and then continue our discussion with M.T. Wilson, talking about Unburdened, the Christian Leader's Path to Sexual Integrity. We're going to talk about that path specifically, but before we get there, well, you no doubt, friend, have heard of the 7 deadly sins: gluttony and greed and sloth, wrath and envy and pride and lust. Yeah. So where does this one fit? Where does this one fit in terms of where the enemy wants to strike Christian leaders? We'll discuss that and more coming up in just a moment. And ladies and gentlemen, for those who are traveling with us this afternoon, perhaps obviously on your way home or someplace in your car, maybe not able to keep up with what's happening in San Bernardino, but we knew that 3 suspects were on the loose. We also believed that they were in a black SUV of some kind. Some originally said perhaps a Yukon. Currently, there is a black SUV parked on what looks like some kind of major road. I don't know whether it's a freeway or not. And shots were coming out of the vehicle from both sides. And there is one person that is down, and we don't have any more information. We don't even know whether this absolutely is connected to what took place in San Bernardino, but it's not that far away from there. And so that is the very latest on this situation. And this is why, again, we ask you that you would pray in behalf of finding the suspects. God knows where they are. He can reveal all of this. Well, if you're just tuning in, again, M.T. Wilson is a licensed professional counselor and board-certified coach. And we're talking about his recent book, Unburdened, The Christian Leader's Path to Sexual Integrity. And, you know, it's kind of interesting to think about those 7 deadly sins, because we realize that all of them are deadly. Yeah, but the question is, if the evil one is going to come after us, does one have a priority over the other? And let's just go over those again: gluttony, greed, sloth, wrath, envy, and pride, and lust. Why is sexual sin more serious, as serious? Where does this fit in terms of the enemy's attack?
Well, that's an interesting question. Obviously all sin has consequences.
Right.
Lust, though, is something that's connected to our sexuality, and our sexuality is a core part of who we are. And so there is a sense in which the consequences, I think, may be a little more, well, deadly, I guess isn't the right word, but they may be more consequential because it's really an affront to the image of God inside of us. You know, we were created male and female, and there's something about our sexuality and our gender identity and our all of this that's just a core part of who we are. And so when we sin in this way, I think it really has more impact on us than we may realize.
Yeah, even Paul, I think, to some degree addresses that by saying, you know, other sins are outside of the body, but this one in particular is noteworthy in that respect. What, in particular, are additional risk factors for Christian leaders in this area?
Well, you know, the Christian leaders, number one, it's kind of lonely at the top. You know, Christian leaders are isolated in the sense that, you know, we as Christians in churches or nonprofit organizations, we look up to them. And so there's this isolation that goes with that. And we assume that the pastor, when he says that he's going out to visit the shut-ins or he's going out to run an errand, we assume that he's doing what he's doing. When he's in his office and he's preparing a sermon, we assume that that's what he's doing. Mm. And so there's assumed integrity for that person who's clergy that, you know, maybe we don't assume for other people. And so there's not that much accountability that happens for those who are at the top. Unless that person invites other people to be accountable with them, there's just not that many people that they perceive that they can go to for accountability for a struggle with this or any other sin.
Mm. Well, you hope to advance this to the point where men can start to get freed up from this, and you talk about a grace-based path. What does that look like?
Well, the grace-based path is that we can, in fact, the title of the book is called Unburdened, and it may not be exactly what we think. We oftentimes think that unburdened is either on the one extreme to where we have no struggle whatsoever with sin anymore. And, of course, that only happens in heaven. That doesn't happen here.
Yes.
And on the other end, we have this faulty notion that that unburdened is the ability just to do whatever we want to, that it doesn't matter what we do with our body, it doesn't matter what we do sexually. And, of course, we know that's not a Christian ethic either. But the unburdened idea is to be able to live within the constraints, within the yoke that God has given us, and that's where freedom is found. It's not found in just doing what we want and not worrying about sin, and it's not found in not struggling with sin. It's found in staying in the yoke that God has given us and following the path that Jesus, our yoke fellow, the other ox on the side of us, is traveling. And so the grace-based path is to say, you know, when Jesus said, take my yoke and learn from me, there's an assumption there, Christian leader or not, that there's a sanctification process to this, and there needs to be the grace given to us that we're still learning how to live in that yoke.
Mm. Okay,
and we may struggle, and we may make some mistakes, and we need a safe place to be able to work that through.
Okay. How about the first step in moving forward on this path? What is that?
Well, there's a lot of things we can do. I mean, obviously, you know, for anybody who deals with sexual integrity struggles, there's a lot of things we can do. We can find accountability relationships. We can put filters on internets. We can put certain constraints, you know, in terms of where we go and what we do. And those are all good things. But the place where this starts, any sanctification process starts, is a recognition that I need to surrender my weakness to God and ask for His strength in my weakness. It's really surrender. That's where it starts. Everything else is ultimately just a self-help program. Those are good things to do, but that's not where it starts.
Where does pride fit into this discussion?
Pride fits in because we think that either it's not that big of a deal when we're struggling with something, or we don't want to admit our weakness to another person who might be able to help us, or we don't want to tell our spouse what we're struggling with. Or we don't want to invite somebody in to be in an accountable relationship with us, so it causes us to isolate. It causes us to minimize the damage that are of the consequences of our choices. So I think that pride is the root issue, I think, of all sin.
Okay. Well, how about people under pressure? Do they become more logically, or should they be more logically concerned about that this is a time when they could be particularly at risk?
Yes. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean that a person who's under a great deal of stress is necessarily going to struggle with sexual integrity issues.
Okay.
But they will struggle with some other kind of thing. Because when we're under stress, we're either going to handle that stress in a healthy, godly way, or we're going to try to pretend like it doesn't exist, but it's going to then get pressed out into some unhealthy, ungodly way that maybe is not a way of our choosing. So, I mean, when we're under stress, we can get angry with our spouse. We can do things that are less than godly. We can struggle with overeating. We can struggle with sexual integrity issues. It'll find its way out. If we don't handle it in a godly way, it'll find its way out in an ungodly way.
In one of your chapters, you are an advocate for spiritual disciplines, and, you know, it's that D word that often gets us caught up of, oh, my goodness, now this sounds like a lot of work. How do we engage spiritual disciplines? I realize there's definitely work to it, but that in a way that, you know, people don't fight it.
I think I was listening to the commercial that was in the middle about feast versus fasting.
Yeah.
And it's this idea of the don'ts versus the do's. You know, we can focus on don't do this, don't do that, don't do that. And there's an element that we need to do that. But it's also the things that I can do. So I can either eat junk food or I can eat nourishing food. I can eat something that really doesn't cause me to be healthier, or I can eat something that satisfies me. So it's this idea of disciplines is we look at it as a big negative thing. Oh, gosh, I have to go work out. Oh, gosh, I have to eat something healthy. And we focus on the negative side. But there's a positive side to discipline, that if I actually feed my body something that's healthy and nourishing, then it actually causes me to feel better. It causes my body to function the way that God intended. And guess what? My mind works the same way. My spirit, my soul works the same way. So discipline is ultimately a good thing for us. Yes, it causes some short-term pain, but it causes some long-term benefit. And that's the thing that we need to focus on when we're thinking about discipline.
For Christian leaders who realize that they need help in this area, is it better to start with people that know them and, you know, love them, or is it better to talk to somebody, come back to the safe question, this is where I'm going with this,
sure,
that doesn't know them very well, and that they don't feel like, you know, wow, I have to, you know, this is really embarrassing for me. I mean, it's less embarrassing when you talk to somebody that doesn't know you very well.
Well, that could be true. To me, I would encourage that person to do whatever they're motivated to do.
Okay.
Because the truth is, the first step, any step in the right direction is the best step. So for some people, they may have a relationship they feel like is pretty safe, but they're taking an extra risk of going to this deep place. If they have that kind of a relationship, I would say pray about it and then jump and take the risk. But for a lot of people, I mean, 70% of Christian leaders, men who are in Christian leadership, don't have anybody they call a best friend or a close friend. So, you know, for a lot of people, they may not have anybody that they feel like they've let in even to that level to where they can even take that risk of trusting. And that's oftentimes where I get brought in, is they've read an article I've written, or they've listened to our blog, or heard me speak somewhere, and they'll reach out to me and they'll say, look, I don't have anybody I can turn to with this, and I don't know what to do. And so part of what I do is, among other things, I serve that role of that safe person. And part of what we do as we're walking together and doing some of the initial work is we start to problem solve. Who's a safe person in your life? If you don't feel like you have anybody, let's think outside the box. And I try to help them transition, moving from just working with me to working with me and then having other people in their life, because ultimately they need those relationships in their world who can walk with them long-term in safety.
All right, very good. MT, obviously you can't be the personal counselor for any men who are listening today to hear all this, but if they buy your book, what is the likelihood that, you know, you could say, you know, if you just take these steps, I can almost assure you, you're going to find true gain, spiritual nourishment, help, a transition into something healthy here?
Yeah, I mean, obviously I can't make any guarantees because everybody is unique, but but clearly taking any step in the right direction is a good thing. And so, you know, for example, I mean, there's lots of other books out there as well, and any of those could be beneficial too. My book, though, is focused on grace. It's focused on giving permission to take a couple of steps. It's got very practical things that come from my work with men in the back, a checklist of things that you can look through and say, look, here's this is overwhelming to me, but I've got these three steps that I could take. And so it's intended to be incredibly practical to walk alongside it. I tried to write it in a voice as if someone is hiring me to walk with them.
Yep, I've noticed that. And with that, I was kind of thinking that, you know, some guys might want to share this with a small group as well. So another suggestion on that front. So if people would like to check out more at your website, where do they go?
Easiest place is my full name, MichaelTodWilson.com.
Okay, MichaelTodWilson.com. Name of the book is Unburdened, The Christian Leader's Path to Sexual Integrity. Thanks, my friend, and I appreciate your time today.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
You bet. We'll take a time out. More to come in just a moment, and I'll tell you what's ahead after we continue with these messages.